You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
If you follow my material, you know that I really like alliteration. In fact, my wife has told me many times that sometimes I like alliteration too much, but I really like providing some tools for you so that you know what to follow in this process of saving your relationship. And so I talked about those three C's of saving your marriage, of connecting, of changing yourself and creating a new path. And I talk about the three C's of carrying out your plan, of being calm, constant, consistent. Well, today I want to talk about actually five C's, and those five C's are the trouble spots of a marriage, the five C's of trouble. And this occurred to me. I had a listener who said, hey, there's a whole nother group here that you're talking about. And I realized that this person was correct, that there really are five places where marriages get outwardly in trouble. Now, let me say, first of all, that there is a root issue behind all of these. But first, let's talk about what these problems are, because most couples find at least one of these infects them at some point. So here are the five trouble spots of a relationship: cash, children, coitus, control, and commitment. Cash, children, coitus, control, and commitment. Now, obviously, I had to work a little to get all of those in, but let's talk about how that works. First, cash. Cash is the money issue. A lot of times when we look at why people divorce, they name money as very high on their list of reasons why they got in trouble and why they've decided to divorce. Couples really struggle with dealing with money. That's the thing about money is there's almost a mythical quality to it. There's a symbolic piece to it. And so you often find that people are really struggling with the symbols that they carry into the relationship. But in the midst of all that, they're also struggling with values and with how each of them think about money and understand money and what they believe about the choices around money. A lot of times we carry these ideas in our mind from our families that we grew up in about what money's about. Maybe you grew up in a family that didn't have much money, and so every moment was scrimping and saving. Or you might come out of a family that had money difficulties because when a dollar came in, it went back out the door. Or maybe you grew up in a family where money was not the issue because there was plenty of money. There's plenty of cash flow coming through. And so the cash issue just wasn't there. People spent what they wanted to, and it was no big deal. And then you have people who had plenty of money, but they held on to it tightly because that meant something. That meant something very important to them. Usually money falls down into two symbolic places. It's either security or freedom. Security or freedom. And those are almost at odds with each other. But just for a moment, let's talk about what security and freedom are about. First, security means holding on to that money and having it for the future. And so people who see money as a symbol, a symbolic place of security, hold on to their money very tightly. They plan for the future. They plan for retirement. And sometimes they hold on so tightly for security that they forget that money also is a way of freedom, of having fun, of being able to enjoy things. And so let's talk about freedom for a minute. For people that money is symbolic of freedom, they like to be able to go do stuff. It gives them an opportunity to do things, experience things, have things. It's a freedom to that. They tend to be the spenders. And a lot of times we find people who are all about that freedom. So a dollar comes in, it goes out the door. But sometimes the freedom is so much that it puts the security at risk. So there are lots of ways that our family leads us to believe things as a child, and they're neither good nor bad. They just are models. But the problem is when we put those models together with somebody else that has a different model. Any of those models have potential for working, but all of them have shortcomings. And usually we're finding some place where our spouse's money myth and our money myth from the family we came from don't match up. And so we end up with a cash problem. Not so much whether the cash is there or not, but how we think about that money and how we make decisions around that money and how we choose what to do with the money we have. Do we freedom or do we secure? Do we save it for the future or do we go have a good time? And those decisions tend to be ones that we make as individuals and struggle with our spouse about. And that's where we get into trouble. It's not really about the money myth. It's really not about whether the money is there. It's really not whether there's a cash problem. It's how we think with our spouse and how we make decisions with our spouse around money. If we're not on board with our spouse, sometimes we tend to struggle over those issues. Sometimes there's spending behind each other's back, and sometimes there is a fear and conflict that comes out of dealing with money. So understand that cash is the problem on the surface, but there's something a little bit deeper that we're going to talk about in just a minute. So the second C that gets us into trouble is children. Again, this is not about having children or not having children, though that can be a conflict. It tends to be about what to do with the children. So when I have couples coming into my office before they get married, that's one of the questions I ask. You know, have you talked about whether you're going to have kids or not and what that's going to look like and how you're going to and how many and those rather basic questions. And the reason is because a couple has to decide how they're going to land on kids in the first place. My belief is that once you've married, if you change your mind, that's a different issue. But you need to know. Let's say that one of you wants kids and the other doesn't. Well, in my mind, there's no compromise to that question. You're either going to have a kid or not. And you can't have kind of an imaginary kid or half a kid or one person have the child and the other not. Those just aren't possible. So for me, a go, no-go question before you get married is, are we going to have kids or not? And so now I'm talking about once you're married and how do you deal with those things? Well, one question may be the timing, and that's kind of a place of dealing with that as a couple. But where I see the real issue, the real friction is after the kids are there, how they're to be raised, what values come out, and what you realize is that we begin to enact this belief system that we didn't even know we had. We tend to parent just like we were parented, or the exact opposite of the way we were parented. If we hated how we were parented, we do the opposite. If we loved how we were parented, we probably do the same thing. And rarely do we sit back and say, okay, what are the strengths and what are the weaknesses of the way that I was parented and how do I bring that forward? So now you bring another piece into that equation, and that is a spouse who's trying to figure that same thing out. You don't know how you're going to parent until you're parenting. And this is one of those interesting things to watch. You just don't know how you're actually going to do it. You can talk about how you believe in things and how you want to do things, but we all tend to have a automatic, unconscious set point. It's often in reaction or in collaboration with the way that we were parented. And then you put two people who have these subconscious, unconscious, automatic responses going on, and it's a collision course if they can't talk through it. And here's the real problem. Everybody is going to think that the way they do it is the right way. And this is true in so many areas of our life. The way we do things is the way we think is right. Otherwise, we would do it differently. Now, there are some exceptions to that. You know, when we're eating lots of sweets and things like that, we probably know at some point that's not the best for us. But for the most part, the way we go through our life, the way we carry out our daily life is a symbol of the fact of how we think is the right way. When you go to work, how you put in your hours of work, how you do things, how you clean the house, you know, how you drive, all those things are symbolic of what you think is the right way to do it. And that's certainly true with parenting. So now you've got this other person with whom you have to decide who's right. You're just not going to do it the same way. Sometimes one person just abdicates to the other. But when there is a conflict in a marriage, sometimes it's because of that abdication, and other times it's because there hasn't been an abdication, but you don't agree. You haven't talked it out. So one of the big things about children is not do you agree with how you're going to parent, but do you agree to support each other through that parenting and to learn through that process? That's another underlying piece that we'll get to in just a minute. Okay, so the third C, coitus. Now, this is the one I kind of had to figure out to put in there, but coitus, right? How that sexual relationship carries out. And this is a big conflict point for couples. And the problem is not so much usually about whether, so that's sometimes an issue, but whether in your relationship there's going to be sex, but how and when and all those other questions about sex. And so a lot of times couples both agree that that's an important part of their relationship, and yet it doesn't happen, or yet it doesn't happen the way one or both want it to happen. And they begin to struggle about those issues, and it begins to have more and more resentments. I believe that our sexual self-esteem is one of the most sensitive. And so sometimes we feel slighted and feel judged and feel a lack of self-confidence in that area. And that begins to show itself in the relationship. And what I've noticed is that when coitus is the issue, it usually indicates that there is still a deeper issue at risk. There's a deeper issue at play. There's a deeper issue getting in the way. And it's the exact same one that got in the way of Cash and children. The fact is that when somebody comes to see me and they have a sex issue, I generally think that that's not exactly the issue. Sometimes when they come with another issue, it ends up being a sex issue, because here's what happens. Let's say that a couple has lost that connection, that physical connection. Well, because we humans are wired for that physical connection, when we lose it, when we don't have that physical connection, whether it's just sex or touch, it begins to create resentments along the way, disconnections along the way, and you generally watch it spiral from just being a little upset to being very frustrated, to being very angry and resentful, and the disconnection flows from there. And so when I hear a couple struggling about sex, they're often struggling about connection. More than that, they're often struggling about understanding what that's about in their relationship in the first place. You see, when we're talking about sex, the same issue is there that has been there through all three so far, and in fact are going to be true through all five of these big C's. So the same problem in Cash, the same problem in children, the same problem in coitus. Now let's get to control. Control is the place where one person either feels like they have to control everything or has to give up all control, or where both people are struggling for control. And so you watch as couples battle each other for a sense of control in their relationship. And so I hear people say, you know, what about this person? They're so controlling of me. And what I've realized is many times there are one of a couple of patterns. One pattern is where one is controlled and the other is controlling, and both people have decided to move in that direction, not consciously, but they're deciding to. If you're controlling and the other person is controlled, they're choosing to be controlled, and you're choosing to be controlling even if you don't recognize that fact. Both people have to play that dance. If one person refuses to play the dance will fall apart, and that's often when the relationship falls apart. And so I have people contact me and say, you know, I'm just controlling. I can't help myself. That's just the way I am. And my response is, you can help yourself, and if you don't, then the rest of your life is going to be as miserable as this is right now, because controlling is usually about trying to control something over which you have no control, basically somebody else. And you try to inflict control on that other person while not controlling what you can control, which really are your own aspirations, your attitudes, and your actions. You're trying to reach out to that other person. And by the way, did you notice how I snuck in another alliteration in there? And so we're trying to control things over which we have no control, and abdicating control over the things over which we do have control. When people say to me, you know, I'm just a control freak, I don't know what to do about it, my typical response is, so you're telling me that really you're fearful. You're afraid to let things go the way they're going to go. And so you step in with the fear and allow the fear to control the behavior. Not the best solution. Now, there is another pattern around control versus the control and controlling couple. Then you have the one where both people are trying to control. That usually works very poorly, because both people are constantly scrambling and they get stuck in a power struggle. Both want control, but they don't understand how or what they're trying to control. And so the control piece pops in, and guess what? Same issue as those first three, same issue underlying it. Now, the fifth one is about commitment. This C of trouble is about the fact that both people have not decided to be fully committed to the relationship. You see, I believe that a commitment is a promise to do something when you no longer feel the way you did when you made that promise. This is where the weight of a marriage rests, on a lack of commitment or a full commitment. Think about those wedding vows. You promise to love someone through good days and bad days. And by the way, love is not to have the warm, gushy feelings, but to act lovingly towards this other person in good days and bad days, in healthy days, sick days, in rich days, poor days, and basically every day, and to make sure that everybody else is kept at a distance. That's the commitment we sign up for. And that's a pretty good guiding force, because sometimes we're not going to feel like doing that, but we choose to. When we have those warm, gushy feelings, sure, it's easy to do that. But on those tougher days when you're feeling a little alienated and disconnected, that is where the promise kicks in. If you promise to do something when you're feeling up and great and on top of the world, you're really not promising much. But when you're promising to do it even when you're feeling down and upset and angry with each other, that's the commitment level we're talking about. Marriages get into trouble because they don't follow their commitment, because they don't stick with that commitment. They don't protect the relationship. Now, what is the underlying piece through all of this? Well, it's the secret of marriage. The secret of any successful marriage is about building a we. And each of these are symptoms of the fact that the we has not been established. When you talk about money, we will deal with this money a certain way. I always love it when people come into my office and they tell me all of these twists and turns to how they do their money with each other. And all they're telling me is that they've misunderstood money. Because they tell me all of these little tricks about how it's my money and the other person's money, and the his money, her money, we split up the bills, we do it proportionally, we all these different ways to do it. And the fact is that money is a resource. It's a way of storing resource. It's a way of storing something to be used for the betterment of the family, of the couple. And so whenever they're telling me how they've subdivided that, it's called mental accounting. When you divide something that really has no division. In my mind, there are resources coming into the family and there are resources going out of the family. And the task of the couple is to manage that. That's the task around money, is to manage that resource coming in and going out. And so whenever you divide it out in some way, you're representing whether you see it as our resource or your resource and my resource. And by the way, whenever it's your resource and my resource, it's pretty soon going to be your resource versus my resource, because that's what happens whenever we don't get to our resource. That's what happens when we don't get to our anything. So when money is treated as your money, my money, instead of our money, it is missing the fact that you're building a we. How about around children? Well, we are in this together to raise this child to be an outstanding person. That really, for me, is where I get to it. When I'm talking with parents about parenting issues, I notice that everybody gets to the same place. Everybody wants their kid to be great. Everybody wants their child to be an outstanding, responsible, honest, committed a person in relating to the world, that they bring their best self to the world. And parenting is our attempt to get them to that point. So everything else is in service of that goal of making that child and getting that child to the best way place possible in adulthood, making that child have a great path to that. And so we can either parent as a team, we're in this together, or it's my way versus your way. And by the way, I don't expect a couple to do it just alike. In fact, I tend to think that there's room for multiple ways of parenting in a relationship. In fact, I know that most parents have very different approaches to parenting, and the question is, can they support each other in how each one does it and pull the strengths from each? For instance, a lot of times one parent will be more protective and the other will be a little bit more adventuresome. Those don't have to be at odds. They have to be supported by each other. So there has to be a room for support. There has to be a place where that child is protected and insulated. And then there has to be a place where that child is given some room to stretch the wings and stretch. So you're looking for the roots and the wings, as it's been talked about, the safety, the comfort, and of learning. And both places have a role. And the problem often is that people hear me say, you've got to be a we around parenting, and they think they have to do it just alike, or that one person gets to say, this is the correct way, and you got it the wrong way. And my feeling is, when I'm talking about being a we around children, we are in this as a team together to raise this child to the best adult ability we can. That's our task, to make them the best adult, best citizen in the world. And when we bring our best selves to that, the best pieces of each of our approaches, then we can do that. Now, that does mean that maybe you do have conversations about what is and is not acceptable, particularly around behavior of the child and punishment of the child. So there's some consistency to what's expected of behavior and what's going to happen if the child breaks those rules. But how you do that rest of that parenting, you know, of what you try out and how you provide safety, that's a bit more of a negotiation that represents the we of this. How about sex? Coitus, right? Well, coitus, that's the easy way of seeing a we. There is no more clear physical way of saying we are one than being one in sex. And so that it begins to show the places where a couple is either working towards being a one or whether they're still working on what do I get, what do you get. A lot of times sex becomes how I like to get off versus how you like to get off rather than how we come together and express our place of being a we. So when a couple is focused on the fact that sex is about coming together as a team of representing that being a we, then it has a place to guide through. But when it becomes a here's what I want versus here's what you want, then it begins to break down the relationship. Well, what about control? Well, you've probably already seen by now that control is usually not about being a we. It's about getting what I want at your loss, right? And so control is almost the opposite about being a we. It's about me getting what I want and me making you do what I want. And that rarely gets a couple to a place of being a we. So control is one of those easy places you see is almost the antithesis of being a we. Well, what about commitment? Well, for me, commitment is the heart of moving towards being a we. When you can say, you know what, I'm not always going to wake up feeling rosy and cheery and all connected. When I'm not, I'm still going to be committed. I don't always have to be connected to stay with my commitment. Sometimes when the connection doesn't feel like it's all there, I can lean back on the commitment because I promised something and I'm going to stick to it. So commitment is a way to activate that we. In fact, when people are struggling with their commitment, what they're really struggling with is that place of being a we. And by the way, connection is one way of greasing all of these, making sure that they're all working, because when we feel connected, when we feel that sense of connection in the relationship, we can weather the difficulties of cash, of children, of coitus, of control, and it helps anchor us in that commitment. As you move through those, as you see each one of those, you'll notice that it's all about being a we. And guess what? Anyone can decide that they are going to work towards being a we, even if a spouse doesn't. If that doesn't make sense to you, this is one of the main arguments I make in my system. One of the things I talk about is how you become a we. Let me invite you to defeat the cash, children, coitus, control, and commitment issues that trouble a relationship and move to being a we and being connected so that you don't have those pains. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.